Episode 281 of the Pilot to Pilot podcast takes off now.
Fly with Garmin Avionics? Then grab your mobile device and make the Garmin Pilot app your cockpit companion. Get advanced functions you'll use before, during, and after every flight, including updating your aircraft's databases and logging engine data to plan, file, fly, log with Garmin Pilot.
The Pilot to Pilot podcast is brought to you by Learn the Finer Points. Use the link below to save 10% off their ground school app. Aviation, what is going on, and welcome back to the Pilot to Pilot podcast. My name is Justin Seams, and I am your host. Today's episode is live from Oshkosh. I shouldn't say live. It was live. Now you're listening to it recorded, but it was a lot of fun. It was at the RAA booth. Thank you so much for sponsoring the podcast, and thank you for hosting this as well. It was awesome, and we had a couple hats to give away, and that is because of Bold Aviator. We have partnered with Bold Aviator to make the new Pilot to Pilot hat. Let's call it the 2.0. It is no longer a trucker hat, but you're going to want to go to the link down below so you can find yours and get yours today. No joke, I had someone try to buy it off my head while I was walking around Oshkosh. So that's the second time that has happened while I was there. So get your hat now. It's a hot commodity. Thank you so much, everyone, for coming out. Next year, hoping to do it bigger, better, more live, maybe even live stream it. Currently working on some live streaming or recording software, so hoping to go video here soon. But enough on that. More on Oshkosh. It was a lot of fun. 3 days. That's about my max. You know, I'm about a 3-day Oshkosh guy or air venture, however you want to say it. I highly recommend everyone gets the opportunity to go. Next year, like I said, bigger and better, be more fun. I do a lot of stuff with it, so it's going to be a good time. Hopefully, I'll have a schedule, and I'm still sitting at home for 5 weeks now after training. I haven't touched a plane in a while, so yeah, next year, we'll make it happen. But Aviation, thank you again for everyone that came out. We have a fellow fractional pilot coming on the podcast, and we're going to talk about her story, and then we also have a couple of questions and answers, so stay tuned for that. So Aviation, you're not going to miss this one. Without any further ado, here's the live RAA podcast.
All right. Well, thanks for coming out. I only had 4 hats, so I'll have to figure out some kind of like discount code or like a free hat code to give you guys. So send me a message and we'll make it happen. But I know it was last minute, so thanks for following the Instagram page and coming out. I hope you can hear. I don't know if it goes much loud. Ooh, wow. Okay, there we go. Yeah, but RAA, can't say enough great things about them. Talk to Gary after this. He loves talking about it. It's a great organization, and they've helped out a lot with the podcast and my family and everything. So awesome. They're going to help me get a plane eventually. We're talking about that, right? Setting some money aside for a plane. So we'll make it work. But yeah, I have a fellow fractional pilot here who we just met, but we work for the same company, which we won't name. So don't ask, even though you probably already know, but, it'll be fun. Probably be about like 30, 45 minutes, a little bit shorter version of it. If you have any questions that you want to ask us too, then we can turn it into that as well. So, all right. Well, you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. So first thing I'll have you do is say your first name. Do a very brief intro about yourself. So to say your first, last name, and just say the plane you fly.
Okay. My name's Susie Danielson, and I fly a Longitude right now, and I also fly Blackhawks for the Army.
Susie, welcome to the Pilot to Pilot podcast.
Thank you.
Yeah,
it's good to be here.
You were the second person I've had on the podcast that flies for the same company. The other one was Mike Wagner, if you know who that is.
I do very well.
Everyone knows who Mike Wagner is.
Everybody knows Mike
Wagner. For better or for worse. If you guys don't know who Mike Wagner is, he makes all the funny videos that are very embarrassing, and you laugh at him more than with him.
Yeah. The Teterboro one's the best.
Yeah, Teterboro one was a good one.
Yeah.
But let's get started. First question I ask everyone is, why aviation? Why did you get into aviation in the first place?
Well, it was because of my dad.
Okay.
They installed an airplane-shaped DNA protein in my DNA. But he was a Marine pilot, flew F-9Fs for the Marines, which were on Navy ships. And he was also an instructor down at Pensacola. And then after that, he flew what we now call 135 flights. They called them non-skids back then.
Okay.
Because he basically ranked out of his flying. So they were going to make him fly a desk, and he said, no, thank you. So he went and flew non-skids, and then his company was selling their airplanes to United Airlines. So he said, I'll fly it over there for free. So he flew it over for free and asked for a job and got hired on with United.
That's how you got a job back then? I want a job.
I would like a job, please. Yeah. Yep. And he was also a glider pilot. He competed in sailplane contests.
Oh, cool.
So, I grew up running around with a tail dolly for my dad's glider.
So did you have a choice? Were you kind of like forced into this? Or
no.
Was it, no?
Nope. My sister has nothing to do with aviation.
Oh, cool. So what does your sister do?
She is a political science major, and she's a mom to two very active boys.
There you go.
And she's also an assistant physical therapist. So, okay. Yeah, she keeps
So did busy. You start young then? Were you hooked from the beginning? You want to fly gliders, get into it, and go all out? Or
I wanted to be an astronaut.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I always wanted to be an astronaut. I went and interviewed, and Desert Shield, Desert Storm happened. And so then I came back, and I was too old. So I didn't get program. But the program's awesome.
Yeah.
It was an awesome program.
That's really cool. Yeah. I've had a couple people say they want to be astronauts. It's never in my mind. I don't think I'm smart enough to be an astronaut. Like, I can fly a plane, but that's about it. Yeah. That's a no-go for me. So what was it about, like, what actually got you to start flying then, yourself, personally? Like, was
I don't
it a
know.
Personal
it was,
decision or your dad?
No, it was my decision. Yeah. I actually... He wanted to try to teach me how to fly when I was in high school, and he had a little Musketeer, and he took me up a couple times, but even in high school, I was already a type AA, and my dad was a type AAA, so it didn't work very well for father-daughter time in the cockpit. But then out of high school, I decided I really, really wanted to fly. That was my calling, and I... without telling my parents, went down and joined the Army, because that was the Army was going to give me my license and let me fly without a college degree at that time.
So you just joined the Army without telling your parents?
I joined the Army, and I came back and said, guess what?
Were they happy? Mad?
Well, no, they were happy about it. And they made sure, because I had certain things put in the contract that I signed, because I was eligible for flight school. But they didn't have the high school to flight school program opened at the time, so I had to join. Yeah. And I said, well, if I don't get flight school by a certain amount of time, I'm going to bail out. So, but I got it within a year.
There
so
you go. Any regrets looking back on it, how you went on your path joining the Army?
No, I would not do it again, but it taught me a lot going that way, because I was a crew chief first, so I learned how to work on the helicopters, and we got deployed a couple times, and then I went to flight school, and that was an interesting experience. It's completely different than what it was back then, but it really, they concentrated on time management and organization and stuff, and that is all I do now. You know, it helped me in aviation a lot, learning that time management and learning all that stress, because they put you don't realize it then, but they put stress on you, so you can also learn how to fly, but with the stress that's involved at the same time.
And you didn't mind that you were most likely going the helicopter track then? Because
I wanted the helicopter
track. Oh, you did? Okay.
You start in the military, in the Army, you start with helicopters.
Okay.
And then you can, then you get your helicopter assignments from ranking in class. So first, the top 10 in class get pretty much what they want. Chinooks, Apaches, Blackhawks, or Hueys and Cobras at the time. And then I couldn't pick Apaches, of course, back then, because I was a female. So I got Blackhawks at the time. But they don't give you fixed wing. Well, I don't know how they do it now, but they don't give you fixed wing until you're probably a couple years into flying the helicopters.
Got it. And then your transition from military to coming into the civilian world, did you have a set path you wanted to go down? Did you have like an idea of what you wanted to do?
No, I kind of winged it.
Yeah.
At that point, because I decided that I wanted to get out, because we were just getting deployed all the time and on the road all the time. So I was at about 11 and a half to 12 years, and I said, I really want to fly fixed wing. I don't want to do this all the time. So I started by getting my aircraft add-on ratings, and I went to a 141 school, so I actually got an associate's degree at the same time in aviation, and you get it to solo a little earlier, and you get your license, you get signed off for your license. So it was a little more structured, because I was in the military for so long, I liked the structure. And got my add-on license, got on my CFI IIMEI, and then went and up to Jeffco in Denver. Well, it's called Rocky Mountain now, but Jeffco in Denver, and I flight instructed and tried to get, you know, your getting someone else to pay for your time, so you get your so you can get your hours.
That's always the goal.
And a lot of the airlines, I started interviewing, and they don't count helicopter time. A lot of them say 50%. A lot of them had different math for how much the helicopter time counted towards your hiring time. I'm not going to say total time. But they did count the PIC time. They did count the instrument time. So I didn't have any problems with that. But I needed the aircraft time. So I did that, and then I fell into a freight job.
What did you do freight?
I flew from Jeffco, Rocky Mountain, to Casper, Wyoming, and then to Riverton. Spent the day in Riverton hanging out with all the wonderful Riverton people. Then I'd fly back to Casper, then to Cheyenne, and then back to Jeffco. So I flew checks and blood and medicine. So
what'd you fly?
I flew a Seneca 2 Turbo and a 340.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The freight world is a rough world, man.
So we came out of Jeffco, and we'd fly into Casper, and everybody who was doing freight runs would go into Casper. We had FedEx flying in there. So everybody was trying to get first, especially behind the cargo airline that was going in there that does training in there, because they would go so slow, and all of us would sit there and circle, especially if it was snowing. You know, you're popping boots and circling and out to try and tell them to hurry up because their flaps full going 90 knots. And yeah. Everybody was always, we all got to start beating them there because we had the Chieftains going in and then me with the Seneca. So we had a lot of people going into Casper that morning. And so we'd all stack up in our line. There was a lot of weather, and you're not sure what the runways are like when you get down. So
I always say, I don't always say this, but Denver is probably my least favorite place to fly in the whole country.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. Weather, icing, all of it is terrible. The mountains are great, but getting there is usually the problem.
Yeah. Well, I liked Jeffco and Denver for instructing because you could do a lot of crosswind instruction. You could do a lot of mountain instruction because there is certain things you got to learn, like canyon turns and stuff like that. So we had a lot of access to great training venues and great training conditions when we were in Denver.
Yeah. So you were building all your time, doing CFI, CFII. What was the plan? Airlines? Do you want to be just like your dad, go to United?
So I was going to follow my dad to United, and my dad said, you're going to be really bored because of the airline world, going from the military world to the airline world. So he says, you're probably not going to want to go, but I did get granted an interview with them, and I went through the interview process, and it was right when... It was probably a year and a half before they started furloughing, that big furlough. But it was a year and a half in the process. And so I interviewed, and I was like, so I'm going to interview in a couple more places. And then I interviewed with the fractional. And the fractional sounded a little more appealing to me just because of it's not as structured, which oddly enough, in the military, I prefer medevac, though. And medevac's not as structured because we're... have to be on the spot. We're going somewhere we've never been before. We don't know what the conditions are. So the fractional that I fly with, that's the same thing. You know, it's not the same thing every day. You can change stuff up. You go to really, really interesting places that you don't go on an airline. You don't even go on a commuter. So that was more appealing than the airline. And so I went ahead and went with the fractional rather than the airline track, just because it was more appealing to me. I've had opportunities to go back to the airline or go to the airline, but I've had friends in this fractional company that I'm with go to the airline, even at an older age. And it just, that kind of flying just doesn't appeal to me.
Yeah. What, most of the people that I know that have gone back to the airlines, the grass hasn't always been greener. Is it similar circumstances with you? Like maybe the money's a little bit better, but they don't love it as much as they thought they would.
Yeah. And I think it's just because right now aviation's growing so fast, and we have the Vietnam Plus era retiring. So you're backfilling all those vacancies, and everybody's stressed out. You're coming out of COVID where people are just traveling even more because they're like, well, before we couldn't travel, now what if this happens again? So now we're going to go out and travel. So the system is just burgeoning right now with demand,
right?
And there's not a lot of people that can join that demand. That's why we're trying to get more people into aviation, see how fun it is. There's choices for everybody. People that don't like something like the fractional love the airlines.
Yeah.
And I've seen both, but I have had my friends that left the fractional go over, and they, it's not necessarily that they wanted to go over, but certain aspects that RAA deals with, that certain aspects drove them to go to that point, yeah. And not, because I think it's a more fun job.
Yeah.
But like there's other benefits for sure. that are over the airlines.
And for the people that are here, a lot of them look like they're in that decision-making process mm-hmm. of choosing the path that they're going on. For someone listening right now that maybe they're graduating from Mankato State, Minnesota State, not Mankato State, but and they have all these choices ahead of them. What do you think is most important? Like right now, obviously the money has to be sticking out to everyone. They're like, I'm going to go make as much money as I can. But for a fulfilling career, a lot of times the money is just one part of that situation, right? It's about the love of what you do, enjoying what you're going on. But what would you recommend? How would you guide someone or give advice about choosing the path they're about to go on right now?
So if you're at that decision-making point, you want to really write down what you want, because you're going to, this, the decision you're going to make is not necessarily going to be the only decision, but it's going to be your first decision and give you a basis of how you're going to either like or dislike flying for work. And I look at it as, I put out pros and cons. Okay, the pros of this job are this, the cons of this job are this. Am I going to be able to sustain this for many years of my life? Because sometimes the pace is too much for people, so they'd rather have something that has more options as far as schedules. Or if you have where you are, you want to build your funding so you can buy your new airplane with Gary, then that's, you know, that's also a consideration. But I do it because I love flying, and that's why I'm still in the job I'm in, because I love what that job gives to me. I have a really good quality of life on the road. Mostly.
Sometimes.
Yeah, not recently, but yeah. I have a good quality of life on the road, and whereas the airlines, it's a different quality of life on the road. And I have a lot of friends that don't like their jobs, but they like what their jobs give to them. Yeah. So you got to kind of balance it. Do you want a quality of life on the road? Do you want a quality of life at home? Or do you need a balance in between? And you kind of look at job. And don't be afraid, if you're interviewing with airlines or interviewing with fractionals, don't be afraid to ask those questions specifically, because benefit packages count too. So you got to just look, you got to look at all that kind of stuff.
One thing that surprised me once I finally made it in my career, like where I wanted to go, was how many people are unhappy with their job. It's not just where we are, it's at the airlines. It seems that people are unhappy everywhere. And I think that's a personal choice, right? Yeah. Like you get caught up a lot of stuff and some days are worse than others and it just takes over your mentality. But how do you go about keeping it fresh, keeping it exciting, and just being excited about your job and flying?
Well, when I go out, we usually, in the fractional world, we have new pilots. I'm a training captain, so I get new pilots all the time. And so it's fun to get at what they like or what they see, and how are they going to bring new stuff to the cockpit that I'm in. And we try to make it fun, even though we're trying, you know, we stay professional, we make it fun. You go out and see where you're at, even if you're in Sarasota or whatever. There's stuff that you can see there. There's flight schools you can go talk to. We had a flight school come over to our airplane, the Longitude, and there was like five or six of them that wanted to come and see the airplane, and you can introduce them to that world. Or if you're an airline, you can introduce kids that are sitting in the waiting room to that world, to bring that, to try to glom the excitement off of them if you've lost a little bit of it. And then I just try to introduce stuff or challenge, like, let's learn something new about CPDLC. Even though it sounds boring, there's a lot of really cool stuff about it. So you just try to make it somewhat exciting, because sometimes a job can be very mundane.
Yeah. Must be nice to have CPLDC.
It is.
Yeah, that's a little dig at Longitude versus Latitude. It's all right. I'll let it slide this time. But I mean, it can be a grind, right? Like any job can be a grind, whether you're in flying, whether you're doing whatever you want. I always think of remembering how excited you were when you're soloing and what you wanted to do, especially when you're at the spot of like CFI and time building. I always tell people to kind of slow down a little bit, because you have your eyes set on the prize so much, but really you're going to realize that you're having more fun now. You're going to be looking back at the times you're now, and you're going to wish you still had that. Because realistically, when you make it to the airlines or a fractional, you're not going to go fly small planes anymore. Like usually most of the people we fly with, they don't want to touch a plane at all when they're done. So this is your unfortunately, some of the last times you'll ever be in a 172, 182, whatever you are flying. So enjoy it as much as you can, because you don't know if it'll come back again in the future.
Yeah, the Delta that came in, the pilot that flew it in actually has a twin beach here on the field. So you do have that access, you know, having a small airplane. We have a lot of that. Over at EAA Vintage, I volunteer there. And most of us are, or a lot of us are from Denver, but most of us are from every fraction of the world. We have scientists. We have people that worked at Udvar-Hazy Museum. We have airline pilots. We have just pilots that have their own airplane and just love to come volunteer. So you can still have that joy of aviation. Mm-hmm. But when you do it for work and you get home, you're like, well, I like just chilling at home, enjoying the family.
Hang out with my kid.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You have a new baby. You want to enjoy the new baby. Yeah. So, yeah. So you also want to take consideration of a job that lets you have a family. Yeah. I chose not to have my own family because I was flying for the Army and we were deployed all the time. But that's part of that life choice.
Absolutely. What's kind of like one of your favorite moments in your aviation career? It could be like a flying story that was very fulfilling. It could be just like a win in your career.
Okay. One of the most fulfilling stories is I was in the Army and we were flying, we were flying medevac at the time and I was active duty still. We were flying from Colorado, because I was at Fort Carson active duty, to California to help support the fires in California. So we were going to be medevac standby in case a fire closed around a fireman, we could hoist him out. On the way, we passed over Lake Tahoe, which is where I grew up and where my parents lived at the time. So we came in flight of two and we kind of flew over and around the lake over where I grew up. And so a lot of my friends that are now grown that live there were able to see me and look. And my mom and dad, we, you know, flew near them. My dad had a signaling mirror, of course, and he'd signal us so we knew where we were. And then we flew on to Truckee. And then my dad and mom came in two cars because both crews from both aircraft were going to stay at my parents' house. So my mom first shows up. I don't remember who first showed up. But anyway, she pops the trunk open, and there is a ton of food that my mom had cooked. Then my dad shows up, pops the trunk open, and it's a cooler of beer. So, you know, they met us, and then I was able to take pictures with my parents in the cockpit and around the Black Hawk. And then we went home, and everybody was everywhere in the house, and she shuttled them down to the casino because some people wanted to gamble, of course.
Of course.
And then we moved on and did the firefighting. But that point where I was able to go over my childhood neighborhood in a Black Hawk and have my parents be part of that experience was amazing.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
When you made the transition from, I guess you're still actively flying.
I'm in the reserves,
In the reserves. Mm-hmm. But when you make the transition either from active duty to civilian world, I'm sure it can be pretty stressful, right? Like, I'm sure there's a lot of guidance out there, but it's a whole new world, different. It's all on you, not a structure like we talked about.
It is.
What would you recommend to someone making that transition and making sure they go at it the right way and not get kind of frazzled and stuck
in
the wrong
mindset? So they didn't have any of these ab initio programs that they have out there now for the military to civilian transition, but there are a lot of ab initio, and I would suggest doing that because they're the ones that have gathered all that information for people that go from military to civilian. But you need to corral somebody that knows aviation, general aviation, to get you into that mindset. Because I was all structured military checklists for everything, all that, you know, and they were long checklists. They're not like, you know, mags on, mixture, off you go, you know.
Yeah.
So just, you got to get out of the military mindset where it's, And the Army is not as structured as the Air Force. The Air Force it takes them a lot longer to get going, and there's a lot more restrictions on going from point A to point B than there is for us.
Yeah.
So it's a different kind of mindset. So it's a less of a jump over to general aviation from the Army than it is from the Air Force. But the Air Force flies a lot faster stuff, so I could see that. But it was easy for me to transition to AOMs, FOMs, that's kind of stuff, because that's kind of where the military is. But my suggestion is to get somebody that's really good in general aviation to get you out there and go fly with that person. That's all you're going out and is just flying. Not necessarily instruction. Just go out and fly with them. Go from point A to point B. Listen to the radio calls. you know, taxiing in a little airplane at an FBO where you have no idea what's going on. You know, there's nobody out there. You go up to a self-serve tank and there's nobody there. You put in a credit card and you start pumping gas. That's something unusual.
I would say, what was the most unusual thing from two different worlds? Was it that you had to pump your own gas?
Pumping your own gas. When I was a little airplane, I was doing my cross country solo. I didn't have an instructor with me. And I was like, why not? Let's go to an airport I've never been to. Self-serve. And I checked. Oh, yeah, we have gas. Okay, great. I didn't know it was self-serve gas. I thought, well, it's kind of like a car. What could go wrong? But you have to make sure you know. You have to ground the aircraft. Yep. You got to ground the fuel. You got to pump the fuel. You got to watch what's going on. It's not going to click off by itself like a car.
Yeah.
It was a big difference. And whereas I pull up in a Blackhawk and there's people out there to pump gas.
Yeah.
So it's a big difference.
Would you choose, if you had to choose right now to fly a helicopter or a fixed wing, what would you choose?
A helicopter.
Really?
Yeah.
Are they just that much more fun?
It is. Yeah. It is a lot of fun. It is a lot of fun because you're nap of the earth, high speed nap of the earth. You could come in and I would say that medevac is very fulfilling because you come in and you're rescuing somebody from a dire situation. You've got outstanding medics in the back working on, and you're just hauling butt trying to get to a hospital or something for it. That kind of thing is fulfilling when you're saving lives and stuff like that. Yeah. But flying a helicopter is so different from aviation. There's some great things about flying an airplane, flying a Longitude up at 45,000 feet, going around the clouds, looking down, going, well, it sucks down there. You know, in a helicopter, you're bouncing around, lightning's all over the place. So finding a place to land. So there is a different world, and there's pluses for the aviation or the fixed wing part. But helicopters are.
Do you have any wild Blackhawk medevac stories that you can share?
I have some wild ones, but not really that I can share. But but we have, when we were in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And we did a lot of rescue missions there. The difference between flying medevac in the States and flying medevac in a combat area is very, very, very different. And you're basically just flying seat of your pants, going through the procedures that we all are very specially trained for that kind of thing. So everybody's comfortable. It's very safe, but there's a lot of adrenaline when you're going out into a hot zone or a hot LZ trying to pick people out of there. And you've got the Air Force with their M-130s in one side, and you've got guys helping out on the ground, and you've got stuff overhead keeping a watch on what's going on, and you're coming in, you know, you got Flight of the Valkyries hanging in the background in your head and trying to get in there, but it's an adrenaline rush and it's not a good reason that we're going in there, but it feels good that we're going to save somebody. So you don't want it to happen, but when it does, it's a rush that we get to go help and save somebody's life.
I'll kind of wrap it up with this, but for someone that's listening right now, or someone right here that wants to go see something in Oshkosh, EAA, what would you recommend they go do right now that some people maybe don't go do, or is the best part of the show?
Well, actually, I'm going to lean towards Vintage because that's where I work, Vintage Flight Line. But if you go to the Antique and the Vintage Flight Line, a lot of people they'll go down and kind of peek around the corner to the Vintage area, to the Red Barn area, which has some amazing aircraft out there. But if you just go out and walk around, and there's pilots in there with their airplanes under the wing, and just go up and chit-chat about their aircraft or chit-chat about some of the flights they've had, there's some amazing stories out there. When we pull the pilots in to park them, we sit and start, if it's not too busy, we sit and start to chit-chat with them, and we hear some of the most amazing stories. You've got pilots that have done some pretty amazing things, especially in the Antique area or the 195 area. They have some incredible stories.
Yeah, I bet.
That's incredible stories.
So I just need to walk around with my little recorder and it's like, hey, you want to talk?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you'll find a ton of people that have, they love to talk. You know, they're in their late 70s, 80s, 90s even, and they're still super jazzed about aviation and love what they do. They love flying those aircraft. And some of those aircraft are amazing. And some of them that we have down there don't come every year. So we have a lot of, we have a full Antique parking lot right now that has some really cool airplanes.
All right, there you go. You heard it from yourself personally. Go see it.
Let's take a break from today's episode to hear from our sponsor, RAA. As pilots, we make getting from point A to point B look easy. Just like getting to Oshkosh, it's so much easier to fly than to drive. But if you're like me, financial planning for your future isn't always so straightforward. Fortunately, my partners at RAA created a manual for that. Their complete financial planning guide outlines the 7 key factors you'll want to consider when preparing a strong financial plan for tomorrow, in terms that are simple and direct, just the way pilots like it. Best of all, it's free. So download your complete financial planning guide today at raa.com/pilot-to-pilot. That's raa.com/pilot-to-pilot. And now back to today's episode.
Well, do they have any questions at all? So what are you flying right now?
I'm flying the Longitude and the MH-60 Mike model for the Army. And then I also fly one of my friends' Cessna 172s.
How old were you when you took your first flight?
I was 16. Yep. My dad was trying to get me to get my license before my driver's license, but it didn't work out. I got my driver's license first. So I didn't get my pilot's license until I was 19.
Yeah, cool. I got my pilot's license before I got my car license as well.
Nice. See, yeah. That was the goal I was trying. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thanks.
That's awesome. What are your plans? What do you want to do?
End up in the airlines someday. So I'm going to Mankato State University right now, working on my commercial rating right now, halfway done. So once I'm done there, I'm going to be instructing there and build my hours and head to the regionals and the airlines, major airlines. Yeah.
Well, when you instruct, talk to your students a lot about, you'll learn some great things from them. They come up with some amazing ideas, even though they don't have their license, of how to teach something or how to do something. I learned a lot from my students.
Yeah, definitely. That's what I heard. That's when you learn the most as a flight instructor.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, you sure do. You going to do CFI, double I, MEI?
Yep. Yeah, we do all those. We do the MEI first out of my school, and then we do the single. And then we do the CFI single. Yep.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I did the other way.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, congratulations and good luck.
Yeah, thank you.
That's awesome.
Right, it was nice meeting you.
Nice meeting you.
Yeah, so let's do we can do a quick rapid fire section. How are we gonna do this? So Susie, we got some quick questions for you here. We're going to ask you, and you just say the first thing that comes to your mind.
Oh, you don't want that.
No, first thing.
Nope. Ask Gary. Nope.
He's already been through this.
Okay.
He failed miserably, but we're good. Yeah. No, I'm kidding. What's your favorite airplane of all time?
F4U Corsair.
What about airline? Airliner, if you had to choose one. Maybe to fly on when you're going to your Longitude.
Oh, first class in a 777.
All right. Longitude gets the bougie trips, not us.
That's right.
What about favorite corporate jet?
I'm going to have to say Longitude right now. Right. I actually really like that airplane.
What's the ugliest airplane you've ever seen?
I'm sorry, but the Guppy.
The what?
The Guppy.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty bad.
Yeah.
That's pretty
bad. It just looks weird when it flies. You know, I've flown it faster when I'm flying. I'm like, what is that?
Yeah. I don't understand how it can fly. Honestly.
I don't either.
It doesn't make sense.
But I didn't understand. I flew past the 747 with a shuttle on it. I didn't understand how that was flying.
Yeah.
Either.
Magic.
Yes.
Who's one person you'd want to meet in the aviation industry? Could be alive or dead.
Well, I met Chuck Yeager, that was one that I really liked.
I heard he's really nice.
He was really nice. Yeah. He was like your grandfather.
Really?
Talking to your grandfather. It was amazing.
That's cool.
He had no presumptions at all. But yeah, Chuck Yeager, and I did meet him. So
what's something you wish you knew before you became a pilot?
How much ramen I was gonna eat as a CFI.
Worst airport to ever fly into.
Ooh, that's a tough one. I've flown into a lot of pretty bad airports.
What's the worst one we fly into?
Well, there's a couple airports that have no tower that are in the middle of Texas.
Mankato is one of my least favorite ones.
Yeah. He points at you guys. That's funny. Yeah, there's some pretty bad airports out there, actually.
What's your favorite airport? Like one you just get jazzed up to go to?
Paris.
Once again, we fly different trips.
Longitude.
Yeah. No. would you rather fly IFR or VFR?
I'm going to say VFR.
Favorite airport food?
Favorite airport food?
Yeah.
Popcorn.
Popcorn?
Yeah, because Signature has them everywhere.
It's true. It's very true. Airbus or Boeing, if you had to choose? Long
Boeing.
Flight. Boeing. Would you rather fly... Would you rather fly long trips or short trips? So like as many touch and goes in one day, or is the longest trip?
No, I don't like the really long ones, but I like a longer trip just because it gives me time to interact with the people in the back.
What's the longest flight you've flown in Longitude?
We flew from Dulles to London. I forgot how long it was though.
Yeah. Long though.
Dulles to London. Yeah. It was long. It was. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we were fine. Once we landed, you know, as far as fuel and all that stuff. But London can be, you can get vectored all over the place and slowed down and all this. So we ended up with plenty of fuel.
That's good. Would you rather fly over mountains, beaches, or the city?
Fly over mountains, beaches, or the city? Did you say fly over?
Fly over, yeah.
Yeah, mountains.
Yeah. Would you, let's see, what's the biggest regret of your career if you have one?
Not being able to fly with my dad in the fractional.
There you go.
Yeah.
I was
going to try to get him on the flight, and he passed away before I could do that. So.
I'm sorry about that.
Yeah.
What's the biggest win of your career? Other than flying into your hometown with your Blackhawks.
Yeah, I was going to say that is a big one. That's a big win. I was able to inspire probably four pilots or future pilots into their careers, which are they're going very, very well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Influencing that.
What's your favorite airline to fly on? He doesn't fly for them anymore. So it's all fair rain.
It's a tie between Delta and United.
All right. What's your least favorite? The silence speaks volumes. Yeah. Would you rather do 141 training or 61 training? If you do
141 training,
military. Piper or Cessna?
Cessna.
All right. That's
Cessna.
It.
Longitude.
Yeah, Cessna, but products. Like I meant like trainers.
Well, I actually like Cessnas for mountain training.
Yeah.
And I like Pipers for doing Chandelles and all that stuff. Yeah.
I did my Chandelles in a aero, so I had a lot of fun.
I taught him in an aero. Yeah. Little Hershey bar wing.
That was probably my favorite time flying an aero.
Backwards.
Yeah. I love that plane.
It's a good plane. Yeah. It is a good training airplane.
Yep, absolutely.
Very good training airplane.
Those are all the questions. You survived.
I won. I did better than Gary.
That is a fact.
Okay. Well, yeah. I win though. Just
she
FYI.
Does win. She's probably a better skier too.
Depends. Depends on the day. I had knee surgery, so now I have a better knee. So now I have to do better. Yeah.
That's all that matters.
That's right.
The massive mountains at Oshkosh.
That's right. That's right.
Well, cool. Well, like I said before, thanks for coming on. I appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you.
It's always fun to talk to a fellow fractional pilot.
That's right. It was a lot of fun. Yeah. And you guys, good luck in your careers.
Yeah.
Right. Make good choices.
Yeah, don't make the wrong choice.
Don't make the wrong choices. I wish I could tell you what those are, but I don't. But thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah. Appreciate it. It was a lot of fun.
Of course. Thank you.
Thank you.
What are you two looking forward to in your aviation career going forward? Because you've both accomplished a bunch. What do you have your eyes set on next?
Try to stay home as much as possible and just, I honestly get back into GA flying, use my fly, the job I have to afford to fly GA aircraft and have more fun.
Yeah, that's, I'm going to say, I mean, in my career, I like flying overseas. So I went into an aircraft, so I'm trying to get more of those kind of trips, but I am getting ready to retire from the Army. So I'm going to use that time to do the same thing, get a GA aircraft and get more back into the fun flying, not the work flying, but the fun flying, the camaraderie, the $100, well, it's probably $1,000 burger now, and, you know, that kind of thing. Go to fly-ins, just be part of the people.
Yeah. If I had to choose, like, for actual flying, I'd want to fly global probably, get into more international stuff, maybe go to Longitude first, test the waters, see what the international's like, and then go from there. Yeah.
You said you did a bunch of flying in Colorado, in Metro.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did all my training in Metro. I live right next to Metro.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What did you do with McAir?
The next guy is over, which is Rocky Mountain Flight School.
Oh, okay. That used to be Wings. That's where that's where I instructed.
Cool. Question. So, you know about Colorado and the turbulence and the wind and the mountains. How did you like that, or how did you not like that?
it doesn't bother me because, like I said, it was a great training environment for people that were coming up and wanted the mountain training, wanted the turbulence, because a lot of people are very scared about turbulence. So that was a way to introduce newer pilots to turbulence. We did a lot of nickel rides is what we call them, or fam flight rides. So I would try to pick a day that did have the turbulence. So someone that wanted to fly the airplane could be introduced to something like that, because that is a lot of our flying right now, is a lot of the turbulence, right? Especially right now this year.
Yeah,
there's a lot of turbulence.
I do a bunch of aerial survey in Colorado, up in Laramie, Casper, Rollins.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And I'm like, all my Instagram friends know that I have a gripe with Wyoming because it's terrible to fly in
it's
Wyoming.
It's very windy there.
I hate flying in Wyoming.
Yeah, it's very, very windy there. I a lot of people ask me, how do you read the wind when you're in the mountains? And you just say, pretend it's water, how it's going to flow around the
peaks. That's exactly what I've learned too. Just watching for rotors and mountain flying is a whole other animal.
It is a whole different animal.
I respect it completely.
Yeah, you got to.
Yeah, it was good meeting you.
It was very nice to meet you.
I'm getting ready to take my written next Wednesday. I was going to try to squeeze it in before Oshkosh, but I couldn't because I work at an airport. But what are some tips for passing the written and training for the check ride as well? I'm about 40 hours student pilot for a private. Yeah.
I'll let you go first. So what are tips for just the written and check ride? So I watched, there's some YouTube video of someone doing a check ride, oral check ride from like 30 years ago. I probably watched that about 20 times. It was the worst video I've ever seen, but just having someone else ask you questions. So whether it's maybe getting another flight instructor that you're not as comfortable with, who doesn't know your flaws and knows what you know, or you actually have to explain stuff for the first time again, that's helpful because it's a whole new person asking you questions and they don't know what you don't know, or they don't know what's hidden in your brain that you should know. You talked about a million times. There's also a lot of iPhones, or not iPhones, but resources on iPhones that I'd recommend, whether it's an app like the Ground School app or YouTube videos by Jason Miller. Just dive in and really just try to, I'd say you try to perfect it so you know it better than they know it, honestly.
So along with that, I tell a lot of my students and a lot of friends, I don't do private pilot instructing that much anymore. I just help others go through it. But when you take a test, like when you're taking a written test, and you'll hear this a lot, but people don't seem to do it. There is a way on computer tests where you can skip a question. Don't dwell on it if you don't know it or if you're unsure. Just go past it and keep going, and then it'll come to you because then you're on to something else, and then you'll go back, oh, yeah, I remember that. When it comes to an oral, taking an oral, not the actual flight test, but taking an oral, I always tell people when the instructor asks you a question, pretend it's another student asking a question and you're explaining it to that student. So you're not explaining it to an instructor. Explain it from your head, how you understand it to that instructor, because then he'll know that you have a working knowledge, not just a book knowledge. Teach it to him. So when he asks you a question, you're teaching it to him. So just think of it as another student and you're teaching it to him.
And one thing to know too is they don't expect you to know everything. So if they ask you a question and you don't know, that's not the end of the world. Like, obviously you can't do that multiple times, but like they also want to make sure that they can teach you and make sure that you know what you're doing, but they're not expecting you to know everything. So if there's something like, you know, I really don't know, I can look it up for you though. Like, well, let's dive in and try to figure that together. Now, like I said, don't have multiple ones of those, 'cause that would not be good. But if there's every once in a while you don't know anything, don't be afraid and don't let that frazzle you for the rest of the oral. So like, that's something I do not know, but I know where I can look it up, find it and go do that.
Yeah, we still get orals.
Yeah.
Yeah, for our simulator checks.
I still get nervous for them too.
Yeah, and everybody gets nervous. Yeah. And a lot of times they'll ask you questions just to gauge where you're at in your, so you've already passed, but they're asking you questions to gauge where your knowledge base is. So, you know, if you're getting all these questions right, they're going to start asking harder and harder questions, not necessarily to fail you, but just to see where you're at, especially if you're getting a check ride for private pilots and you kind of know, okay, well, this is kind of where I'm weak. This is kind of where I'm strong. And then when you start going for your CFI, you can start concentrating on the weak and enhancing the strong.
And once you're done with your private pilot written, use Shepherd Air. everything outside of private pilot, you need to know everything on your own. But after that, Shepherd Air, pass the test and study and make sure you know it for the oral.
So, yeah, kind of on the same topic, I'm getting ready to take my commercial. I already got the written done. Thank you, Shepherd Air. But I was wondering, you know, a lot of people say that it's like the private, but a little harder. You know, is that true? Is, you know, what am I in for with the commercial check ride? Or do you have any tips for it and stuff like that?
The commercial check ride was the easiest check ride I ever took. I have never had more fun on a check ride, or I have flown the Aero. I felt more comfortable in that plane than any other plane I've ever flown for a check ride when it was up to that point. The best thing, I'd just go up to the instructor. If they pass you off, they know, they say you're ready for it, you're ready for it. You know what you're doing. But I mean, you're going to have check ride nerves. Just go have a routine. Just do a couple things. Make sure you eat. Make sure you're hydrated. Just all that kind of stuff. And the rest will come. But check ride for me, it was the most fun I've ever had on a check ride. And I flew the crap out of that plane. I just had so much fun. Yeah.
I'm going to agree. That's why I was letting him answer first, because my check ride was easy. The oral part is the oral part. It's a set issue. But good, going out for the check ride, just have fun and show them what you know how that aircraft flies. You don't get in the aircraft, just strap it on. Show them what you know.
Have fun. My least favorite one was 8s on pylons, just because if you choose the wrong visual point, it's over. Like, you messed up.
Yeah.
Like that's the only thing that I felt was out of my control, or it was technically in my control, but if you mess that up, the whole maneuver's done. So that's the only one that I stressed over. But like Shondell's crazy, or lazy 8s. We called them crazy 8s.
Yeah, crazy 8s.
Yeah. We did lazy 8s, and he said, you want to do crazy 8s? Like, absolutely. So yeah, it was a good time. It was fun. Yeah, I like that check ride. It was a good time.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. So you said you're a training captain, right?
Correct.
And you've obviously been through OE. What are your tips for someone leaving for OE in 3 days? Well, no, different company.
Different company, OE?
Just general tips for first time on a jet.
So for OE, what we tend generally look for is that you have a working knowledge of call-outs and procedures. Because we know that, is it a new airplane for you?
Yeah.
Okay. So we know it's a new airplane. We if you have your call-outs and procedures, the rest is easy to teach. But if you're teaching someone call-outs and procedures and everything else, then it gets a little bit annoying, because the call-outs and procedures is the stuff you should have been using in the sim. So I'd say the most thing is call out some procedures, and then the rest, like, is it a Garmin aircraft? What are you going into?
Embraer 175.
Okay. So the avionics will be, and you'll be taught line avionics and all that stuff, and the line stuff. But if you have call out some procedures, it'll make it go so much smoother, a lot smoother.
I think having a good attitude makes a big part. It makes it easier on the training captain.
Yeah.
When you make a mistake, you're going to make a mistake, right? Like, you know how to fly the plane in the sim. The plane flies different in the out of the sim in real life. You're going to be nervous, right? First time having, 90 people in the back, 50 people, whatever it is. So you're going to be nervous, but just take it slow, take a deep breath, and don't be afraid to ask questions. They would rather answer the question than you put the plane or people in a bad situation. So if you don't know anything, just be like, hey, this is where I'm at. Like, can you please help me? And I would imagine they would love to have the opportunity to explain how you should do it on the road.
Yeah. Just ask for a brain dump. That's what you're getting, is a brain dump from the training captain.
And I promise you, they've seen worse. I guarantee you they've probably seen worse. They've seen some stuff. I promise you. If you think it's really bad, they'll probably be like, nah, no way.
Not even close.
Yeah, no. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, of course.
Anyone else? Anything? Going once? Going twice? Gary? Nothing? Got anything?
You have any questions?
All right. Well, we can wrap it up there. Thank you guys for coming out. I'll hang out here if you guys want to talk at all. But that's all I got.
Come to Vintage. See the cool airplanes.
Yeah. All right. That's
thank
a wrap.
You.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
All right.
Maybe I'll see you in the Longitude one day.
Maybe.
Yeah. That's a wrap on today's podcast. Thank you so much for listening to it. If you enjoyed this podcast, please review and like the podcast. So you can do it on Spotify or Apple Tunes. You can do it on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Get those reviews up. That's how people see this podcast. So the more reviews you have, the more likely it is to be recommended to someone else that has similar interests as you. So go ahead and like the podcast, steal your dad's phone and like it on there as well. Make sure you download it too. Maybe he can be a pilot as well. In Aviation, that's a wrap for me today in the live podcast. And as always, happy flying.